departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
Your 50,000-watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for fans of 940 ESPN wondering when one of us is out on a remote, can they tell the difference between Bobby and Joe? I actually got that email a little bit earlier today. You can't make it up. 940 ESPN, 940 ESPN Fresno.com. It's not one, it's not two. It is a full three-hour tour, and it begins right now. 6 minutes, 20 seconds past the hour of 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. I am the host of the program, Christopher Gabriel, back at your service after a day off that was whirlwind, to say the least. But always great to get back into the studio. Good to see my friend, the technical director, producer of the program, Giants fan, Sharks fan, just a general all-around hockey guy, Russ, keeping us moving in the right direction. Also, I think that's Bobby in there. I can't tell if it's Bobby or Joe. I just, you know, they could practically be twins. You want to weigh in during the program, 844-940-3776. You can follow me on Twitter. I hope you do, at CG Program. You can follow the station, too. We hope you do that, at 940 ESPN. And you can email the program. There's a lot of ways that you can reach us. CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. On the program today, as opposed to tomorrow, bottom of the hour, we're talking baseball. Mike Oz returned late last night from the All-Star Game. Looking forward to hearing what his experience was like out at Progressive Field and if he liked the Home Run Derby as much as everybody seems to have liked it. Seems to be general agreement that it was pretty great theater this year. I'm not really a fan of it anymore, but I have to admit, it was pretty amazing to watch these guys do what they did. Of course, they're, you know, they're lobbing those balls up there like they're wiffle balls, and, of course, those balls are, you know, who was it? Was it Verlander, Justin Verlander, who said you might as well just write Titleist on the outside of the baseball? He's probably right about that. Marty Lenz, 4:05, missed him yesterday because he missed me. So Marty Lenz joining me at 4:05, top five at 5. We're going to give you what you didn't get yesterday, not awkward press. We're going to give you Don't Be That Guy. That's what we're going to give you. We made a little switch today. We're going to do Don't Be That Guy. And then at 5:35, our usual visit from Coach Q. And one more thing at 5:55. My thanks to all the folks out at VSIN, Vegas Stats Information, great radio program out in Vegas. And they invited me on at 2:30 today, 2:30 our time, 2:30 their time, and spent about 20 minutes talking to the boys over there on Fresno State football. And I had a whole slew of folks emailing me saying, where is it again? So, sorry. They tweeted about it earlier, and I tweeted about it as well. But it was a good time. And I said largely to them what I said to Julia Lopez on Bulldog Insider last Sunday. And that is that I think that this team is being a little bit disrespected with a 13.5-point underdog. I mean, you always like to hear Lee Corso say, somebody knows something. But I may be proven wrong, but I have a lot of faith in this team. I know they have some new pieces. They lost stuff on the some players on the defensive side, but they also have guys coming back. And I think that this team is going to be a lot better than many are giving them credit for. I really do. And what I told the fellows out in Las Vegas in the last half hour or so is that I think we're going to learn. And this really is not breaking any news, but I think we're going to learn a lot from this Bulldogs football team 2019 edition in the first couple of weeks. I mean, they're going to get tested by the two most physical teams they will play all year. Forget the fact that USC was 5-7 last year. Just put that out of your mind. This is a team that has two or three dozen 4- and 5-star guys. Now, 4- and 5-star guys don't guarantee wins. I mean, the recruiting class at USC last year had 18 of them in there. 18. That's not to mention the amount that they already had on the roster. They went 5-7. And that was a USC team last year that beat UNLV by 22, I believe it was, but it was a 5-point game in the Coliseum. In the Coliseum, going into the fourth quarter, a 5-point game. And you will recall that Fresno State went into Sam Boyd Stadium last year. Excuse me. They went into Sam Boyd Stadium last year, and they absolutely pounded UNLV. So, I get it. You know, I get it. We're doing the game-matching thing. I'm not a big fan of that. But if you want to look at a couple of things, you can look at that Fresno State goes into UNLV, wins 48-3. Arizona State goes in with N'Keal Harry and beats USC in the Coliseum. Without N'Keal Harry, they still come a team very physical, very talented, and Fresno State, pretty even game in the first half in the Las Vegas Bowl, and Fresno State largely took them apart in the second half. New year, new personnel, new starting quarterback, some of the same old faces, guys like Ronnie Rivers, guys like Juju Hughes, there's names on this team that got a lot of playing time last year, and I think a lot of folks are looking at Fresno State, and I said this to the guys in Las Vegas a little while ago. I said, listen, let me be clear with you, and I say this on my program all the time. I'm not a homer. You know, do I want Fresno State to win? Yeah, I do. I absolutely do, but not from here. Feel like I have. I've been here 5 years now, but not from here, didn't go to Fresno State. So I still see things pretty objectively. And, you know, they're playing the school in the first week of the season that I went to, for heaven's sakes. But unless I am way off base, and unless this team goes down there unprepared emotionally and physically, and I just can't believe a Jeff Tedford team would ever be ill-prepared emotionally and physically, I think this team goes down there absolutely ready to play. And that's not to say that USC, this is a team that's going to be coming out breathing fire. They're coming out of that tunnel in the west side of the Coliseum. They are going to come out of that Cardinal and Gold tunnel to the strains of Fight On from the 400-member Spirit of Troy USC marching band, and they're going to be coming out thinking they're winning this game by 4 or 5 touchdowns. How many times do you watch a game where you hear about the coach saying, I've told our guys, do not look past this team. I guarantee you Clay Helton and his staff are telling those guys every day that Fresno State comes up in a discussion, do not look past this team. Do not look past Fresno State. This is not some little piddly team from rural South Dakota with 2,000 students and barely able to put a football team together, finding their way in Volkswagen vans, trudging across country, over hills, through valleys, running out of gas, finding their way to the Coliseum, and just being thankful to be on the same field with the boys in Cardinal and Gold. That is not the team that is going in to the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. It's not. Everybody here knows that. Everybody in the Mountain West knows that. I've had a couple of emails from people asking me, how do you think USC is going to be viewed? How are they going to be talked about by ESPN? My response to everybody who has said that is, who cares? Because this is a national game. It's going to have the focus of the nation on that Thursday night. Saturday night, excuse me. What am I saying, Thursday? It's going to have the focus of the nation, and there's going to be a lot of talk about USC. Of course there will be. It's USC, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, they were 5-7 last year. Yeah, they were only 3-3 at home. They were terrible. But it's USC. And one of the storylines is going to be, how does Clay Helton have to do this year to keep his job? how many wins are going to keep his job? How many wins will keep Lynn Swann as the AD? How tolerant will the USC fan base that expects national championships, if not every year, at least every couple of years? They haven't had one in a while since Pete Carroll was there. That's going to be a storyline. But make no mistake about it, Fresno State will also be a storyline. You're talking about a team that was 12-2 last year, that went up to Boise State and in the most dramatic fashion won the Mountain West in overtime, breaking the hearts of everybody in that stadium except the folks wearing red and blue as opposed to orange and blue. It was a glorious night in the falling snow and the wind and the chill, the dampness of Boise. There was a lot of heat on that red, white, and blue sideline, let me tell you, on that ugly blue turf. By the way, they have a new turf this year, the new and improved blue turf. We're happy for them. Jeez. Hopefully Fresno State won't ever go to red turf. But that's going to be a storyline. Fresno State will be a storyline. Now, this is a program that is 22-6 over the last 2 years. Two Mountain West West Division championships, a Mountain West championship, and two bowl wins since Jeff Tedford got here. Over Ed Oliver led Hawaii, and over Houston, and over the Pac-12 rep from Arizona State. They're going to be a storyline. Jeff Tedford, they should be as much. I won't say more because they're not going to be the bigger storyline playing USC in the Coliseum. They're not. But I'm waiting to hear it. I'm waiting to hear fans lamenting that, oh, these, you know, all it's going to be on Twitter, it's going to be on Facebook. Oh, these USC guys, they're getting all the pub from ESPN. They're getting all the pub. They don't care about little old Fresno State. You're going to hear it. It's no different than SEC fans who think ESPN hates them, and Big Ten fans think ESPN hates them, and Big 12 fans think ESPN hates them, and Pac-12 fans think ESPN hates them. Well, that may be true. That last one may be true. Playing the wrong part of the country, and they have a lousy conference. I'm just teasing a little. But to bring this full circle with where we started, you know, going on the radio for about 20 minutes with Vegas Stats and Information Network, VSIN, out in Las Vegas. Great stuff. Great stuff talking to the boys there. That was a lot of fun. But, you know, they've got, in case you're wondering, they have Fresno State rated 59th in the nation. 58th, San Diego State. Do you know who they have rated as at 57? Hawaii. Not kidding. Hawaii. I said to their producer afterwards, I dropped him a note and I said, that seems a little, you know, 59 seems a little low, man. It just seems a little low. Seems a lot low. But, you know, that's where they're at. I think a lot of that is because of who isn't on this team this year. And I'll tell you, Fresno State has a glorious opportunity to really be the story of the year in week one by going into the Coliseum. It doesn't matter that it's USC coming in on a 5-7 season. It's USC in the Coliseum. Fresno State has an opportunity to get the Kirk Herbstreets, who gave Fresno State tons of love last year. I don't want to hear anybody tell me that, Kirk Herbstreit doesn't like us. I know there's a couple of fans that think that, and they're wrong. They're flat out wrong. You know, because we talked to him in person when we were there. Not me personally, but we heard from Kirk Herbstreit. And we heard from the guys out there, and that's from Reese Davis. That's just, they know the kind of program that Jeff Tedford has going here. And Fresno State has a chance. You know, we're already hearing about, you know, Boise State's picked to win the Mountain West. Even though they're replacing Brett Rypien and Alexander Mattison, that's a tremendous 1-2 combination. But somehow those guys up in Boise, replacing a prolific guy in terms of numbers, Brett Rypien, you know, replacing him with a sophomore, Chase Cord, or maybe even a freshman, Hank Bachmeyer, somehow they're not going to miss a beat. You got Jorge Reyna coming in, who's seen a ton of game action, who's shown what he can do. We don't know what he can do as a starter yet, but somehow they're gonna skate through the whole season, and mop up. I'm not sure I buy that. For Boise State, it's gonna be good. Don't get me wrong. Their offensive and defensive line, especially their defensive line this year, they're gonna be terrific. But they're replacing some players, just like Fresno State is. And to put a button on this, Fresno State can steal a lot of thunder from the other group of five teams around the country, most notably UCF and Boise State, by going into the Coliseum. It won't matter that USC was a 5-7 team last year. It'll be that Fresno State was 10-4 and a bowl game winner, 12-2, Mountain West champions, bowl game winner, and now they went down. Their last game they played was Arizona State. They beat them down. And now the opening game of the year is in the Coliseum, and they beat them down too. Fresno State can be an early season storyline in college football by going into the Coliseum and winning that game. If they lose, it's not the end of the world. It's not a conference game. And if you want to look at it in the most positive light, they're expected to lose. They're nearly two touchdowns. They're nearly a two-touchdown underdog. So they can do a whole bunch of stuff to get this off in the right direction. And it doesn't get any easier because they're going to play another physical team the following week that probably doesn't have as much overall talent as USC, but we already saw how that defense really stymied Fresno State last year. But this year, the game is here. And instead of a nice, comfortable evening in Minneapolis, it's going to be a hot, miserable, muggy night here. That'll be nice. Glad you're hanging out with us. You want to weigh in? You certainly can. 844-940-3776. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will talk with Mike Oz from Yahoo Sports. Mike Oz's wonderful summer road trip to Cleveland, Ohio, shores of Lake Erie. They don't have a lot of good taco stands there. I just tell you that. I don't know if you can find a taco truck there, but I know that's always the quest. I didn't have a recommendation to give him because I don't know of any there like I do in Houston and some other cities, but we'll find out what he thought of everything that went on there. So, you know, things in life evolve, right? Television sets, there used to be in virtually every city three stations, ABC, NBC, CBS. And in larger cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, several other larger markets, you had two local channels with that, so you had a grand total of five. Your TV was black and white. You had a little round sort of black disc. It looked like an upside-down bowl with two chrome antennas in it. And you'd move them around a little bit. You had UHF channels eventually jumping in. TV evolved. Three channels, five channels, antennas. Eventually, we started getting closed-circuit TV. You could go watch games in bars with closed-circuit TV. That was fun. And then you started to get early cable systems, like in the early 80s in Manhattan. It was Manhattan Cablevision. And I had this big plastic box with a switch on the side that would go to an A setting, a B setting, or a C setting. And then you would click it to whichever letter you wanted, where the channel was, and you'd push a button, a plastic button, for the station to change to where you had it. And you had the five local, you had the ABC, NBC, CBS, you had Fox finding its way in, you had the local Channel 9, WOR in New York, and then you had all these cable channels. You didn't really know what they were. A lot of them were just local access, but things evolve, right? Music has evolved. Sports evolve. How we play sports evolve, and ways to improve sports. Hopefully it's improving. Sports themselves, though, they evolve based upon rule changes. Well, that brings me to the Atlantic League. The Atlantic League and Major League Baseball, back in February, announced a three-year partnership, and Major League Baseball allowed the Atlantic League, minor league, to basically serve as a testing ground for experimental playing rules, as well as experimental equipment. And the most notable rule change or rule that's being tested is batters at the plate being given the chance to steal first. I'm going to give you a chance here to just go, what? Yeah, I said that right. A chance to steal first. They're an independent minor league. They're going to expand their use of robot umpires. All right, a lot of these rules are going to come in the second half of the season. One, I'll give you some of the other rules. One, I'm going to get back to the stealing first. One foul bunt is allowed with two strikes before it becomes a strikeout. I like that rule. I think that's pretty good. Pitchers are required to step off the rubber if they want to try a pickoff. And they're going to relax the rule on check swings to be more batter friendly. That's probably going to get Justin Verlander out of his mind because he already thinks it's just the whole deck is stacked against pitchers. But the idea here is a batter can try to steal first on any pitch that wasn't caught in its initial flight from the pitcher. You know, because you've got the third strike where if the catcher drops it, he can try to run to first. That's not really a steal. Now, yeah, you got a guy up there, and maybe it's a ball and a strike. Pitcher releases, throws. Catcher can't handle it, goes to the backstop, or bounces off the umpire. Wherever it goes, runner can take off and try to go to first. How do you feel about that? Are you good with that? You have, that to me is, I guess I've always grown up with the rule of the drop third strike, a runner tries to go to first. I've never really understood where that came from. I've never looked it up. Maybe Mike Oz knows. When we get Mike on, we can ask him about that in a little bit. I've never really understood it, but it's always been a part of the game. It's been there since I was a kid, a long time ago. Everybody knows that rule. But even the first pitch, you know, guy comes up and, you know, first pitch goes past the catcher. He could just decide he can just run to first. I mean, think about that for a second. Would batters potentially try to, I realize you're talking about guys throwing 90 to 100 miles an hour. Unless it's a really slow floating breaking ball, but you're talking about guys potentially on one of those breaking balls, maybe trying to. Are there going to be rules if this was ever instituted that would restrict where a batter could lean if a batter was trying to obscure a catcher to do something so that the ball would go by? How would that change strategy? You have a power hitter up there, and you know that maybe the first base is open, and so maybe they're gonna Or maybe it's not open. Maybe there's a guy on second. Maybe there's a guy on third. And they think that maybe they're going to try to pitch around this power hitter. Ball gets away from the catcher. Has the manager already told you, or the third base coach already said, if that ball gets away, take off? So you want to get him on base, but you're going to take the bat out of his hand. I mean, I don't know. There just seems like there's a lot of strategy maneuvers here that could be good. Or might not be good. It's going to be interesting to see how that all works out. I'm going to ask Mike what he thinks about it. Mike probably doesn't even care because it's an independent minor league, so maybe he doesn't even care. But I'll throw it his way as well. Mike Oz, Yahoo Sports, coming up. This is the CGB.
Take me out to the ball game.
He's an elite baseball mind, possessing an unrivaled talent to write 10,000-word articles over dinner on America's pastime and finish them before dessert. He's also the world's foremost authority on tacos. And when you combine baseball and tacos, you get... baseball and tacos. Here's Mike Oz.
Yeah, I might have been exaggerating very little, saying that moments ago, Mike Oz landed back at the airport here, and he's in the limo right now, sources tell me, coming on this program, because Mike Oz puts a premium on coming on this program. Mr. Oz joins me again. How are you, my friend?
You know that's not true, because you've seen me once today.
Okay, you're supposed to roll with it. You're supposed to. The idea is you're supposed to roll with that. But that's true. I didn't expect to see you at the place that we were both having lunch at.
Yeah, I honestly hardly ever go to that place because it's impossible to find parking.
And that's why I don't go either. I love the food, but the parking is another story. You might as well just get airlifted in and drop from a helicopter to go there.
anybody in Fresno knows exactly what place we're talking about without even having to say the name.
Yes, exactly right. Hey, before we jump into some of the other stuff I want to get to with you, I was just talking about this Atlantic League, Major League Baseball deal. Of course, that's an independent league. It's a lot like the league in the Midwest with the St. Paul Saints and the Fargo-Moorhead Red Hawks. What do you think about this stealing first? You know, I grew up with the rule, so did you, of the dropped third strike and you run to first. I don't know when that rule came in. I don't never remember baseball not having that rule. But what do you think about this, you know, Mike Oz at the plate, first pitch, gets away from the catcher, and you can try to leg it out to first?
So my first thought was that it was insane and ludicrous and horrible, and I thought about it more, and I guess it makes sense. My issue with it after I think about it more is I just don't know how often it would be used. Like how many pitches are there in a game where a batter can conceivably just be like, all right, I'm running to first base. Like a couple wild pitches a game, maybe one. I just don't see it as like a viable thing that would happen all that often. So it seems like an odd rule to throw in the mix and then just complicate things for the purpose of what? Like, what's the end game? What's the goal? That's the part that I don't understand, because I don't think it makes baseball inherently more interesting or more exciting. I think if there was somebody out there campaigning saying, if there's players, for instance, saying, you know what, we should be able to steal first because you can steal second in a wild pitch, you can steal third in a wild pitch, but I've never heard that argument. So I guess I want to know where it's coming from. If this was somebody's gripe, like if the players' union was like, hey, this makes a lot of sense, then maybe I would consider it. I don't know. I've never heard anyone say, hey, this should happen.
So how let me move to this. How do you and Justin Verlander, you'll speak for Justin Verlander now, feel about one foul bunt being allowed with two strikes before it becomes a strikeout? That's interesting. It's you know, because Verlander will say one more thing to make this a hitter's game.
Yeah, I to some degree, I think the art of bunting is lost, in the sense that I don't know that people do it all that well anymore. Like, some people I think do it really well, and then most of the people do it like not very good at all. But I don't think that's a reason, because people have not placed any effort into it. I don't think that's a reason to make a rule change. I think if they want to be better at that, then just practice it more.
Okay.
So in a way, I'm saying no. If you can't do it, then don't do it.
All right. And then that would, you know, and one more thing to upset Justin Verlander would be, and a lot of pitchers. I'm just singling him out because he was the one who had the spine to actually say what he thinks. Relaxation on check swings to be more batter friendly. It's already subjective, because we watch check swings that go both ways, that we think are too far, but they are called a ball, and don't go far enough, it's called a strike. But this seems like, you know, okay, so what? Are we saying if it goes 4 inches past the center of the plate, 6 inches, how do we get any degree of consistency on a call like that?
And I don't think I think the problem is that if you start drilling into that, then you have to come up with a mechanism to ensure it or guarantee it. And then we're talking about stopping the game to run a replay and have the replay determine where the bat went. And then we're just piling on things. And I think it's one of those things that's a human call. And I think oftentimes get it right. They sometimes get it wrong. And, you know, if we're going to live in that world of human error, then I think that's part of it. But if you start then trying to perfect every single thing like that, then you run the slippery slope of, you know, well, why don't we just have robot umps? Why don't we just, you know.
Well, they're doing that too.
Do the, yeah. And you know, I want people to get things right, but I don't necessarily want it to turn into a robotic game.
Right. I got you. So then we won't hold you to this, because in sports, it's not flip-flopping. It's just accruing more information and then making a more informed decision. If Mike Oz was the commissioner, would you be in favor of, let's just say, the bunt, the first, you're allowed one foul bunt before it becomes a strikeout?
No.
Okay. That's the only one I'm going to ask you.
No.
All right, we're going to move on.
No.
All right. All-Star Game, you were there. I've been to that park. I like that park. It's funny.
I like that park, too.
Yeah, it's funny because... And I promise you, I'm not going to go into a Jerry Reinsdorf rant, but I'm just going to say Jerry Reinsdorf, his big claim to fame with when it was the new Comiskey was, we didn't need a throwback park, so we wanted something more modern. Well, that's all well and good, except Cleveland got their park right. That park is I've been to most parts of that park, and the sight lines are great. It's just a fun, very user-friendly park. I enjoyed that. I enjoy Progressive Field.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about it I really like. Like I think it's set up really well. I like there's sort of this whole open door kind of bar area out in right field, but it's kind of covered and it bleeds into a standing room only area. And then the second deck, there's like an entire part of the outfield that's all just very kid oriented. I like that. One of the things that struck me at that place, I've been there twice now, is, and it was the same this time, the food and everything is relatively cheap compared to what you would expect at a baseball game. I think it's a very fan-friendly ballpark.
I would agree. So let's start with the Home Run Derby. I'm assuming you were there. Do you believe that, I mean, there's been a lot of criticism over it the last couple of years, not that it's been a bad thing, but that it's gotten a little tired. Do you believe... The way this year's played out has, well, for lack of a better word, has juiced the Home Run Derby?
No, I loved the Home Run Derby, and I've loved the Home Run Derby since they changed it to the format that it is.
Yeah, but not everybody is my guys. Not everybody is my guys.
That's fine. Then go put everyone else on your show and ask their opinion.
No. That's not, what I'm saying is not everybody is the baseball aficionado that you are. There goes.
But I thought it was exciting. Like I think the Home Run Derby at this point is more exciting than the All-Star Game. I think it's been that way for the last
really
3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of excitement, like the All-Star Game is fun. You know, I like to see all the players, but there's not a ton of drama. Like, I don't watch that game thinking, oh, I wonder if the National League is going to pull it out. I mean, maybe because they've lost so many in a row, but I think there's more drama. There's more excitement in the Home Run Derby. I think this year, it played out really well. We didn't get a ton of those kind of like walk-off type, you know, I'm going to hit the home run at the last second when the buzzer goes off. There was a couple of those, but the last couple of years, I remember there being a lot of those, and that was exciting, man. It's like you got 10 seconds left to hit one home run and you're just trying to get it. Like, that's fun. And I think the Vlad Jr. Jock Peterson thing was great. I mean, you know, I came away from that most impressed by Vlad Jr. than Pete Alonso. Not saying that makes him like an illegitimate champion or anything, but I think, you know, Vlad Jr. was the story. He was
no
the
doubt.
Thing that people were talking about. And yeah, it would be great if you know, Vlad and Jock were the finals. But I was saying this to somebody the other day. I kind of felt like it was, you know, baseball last year where we kind of knew, at least in my opinion, the Astros and the Red Sox were the best two teams. And whichever one of those won in the ALCS, you know, like they're probably going to win the World Series. And that was kind of what happened, you know, where you get the semifinals was actually the finals, and then the finals were just, you know, the finals. So I don't have a problem with like that, you know, that last round not being as exciting as the round before it. That's fine. It doesn't take away, in my mind, how exciting the Jock versus Vlad Jr. was. And I spent most of the Home Run Derby, honestly, like out in the stands, just kind of hanging out with people. And I mean, it was amazing, man. They were into it. They're having a good time. They had no skin in the game once Carlos Santana was out. So, they were adopting Vlad Jr. like he was one of their own, and it was a great environment.
Talking with Mike Oz, baseball writer, Yahoo Sports, taco expert as well. All right, I'm going to give you options here. Any way you want to play this, you go right ahead and do it. We're going to talk about three second-place teams. Tampa Bay, 6.5 behind the Yanks. Cleveland, 5.5 behind the Twins. The Oakland A's, 7.5 against the Astros. If there was a team among those three that you believe would get into a buying spree or at least a piece or two to make a real run at trying to win that division, who would it be?
You said the A's, you said the Rays, and who else?
The A's, the Rays, mm-hmm. and the Indians.
I think it might have to be the Indians, or I don't know about a buying, but I think I could see them doing some trades. I don't think the Rays are going to go out and make many deals, you know, unless they think it behooves them in the long term. And the same thing with the A's. Like, I don't know that the A's are going to go out there and, you know, do some crazy buying spree. So by process of elimination, I'm kind of going with the Indians, and I feel like, you know, they're the team that might feel like they have the most to gain there. Because, you know, they have kind of made a run recently at the Twins. They might be thinking that, hey, that we can, you know, we can make some of this up. And, you know, if there's something they can do, you know, we've heard about them trying to move pitchers for a while now. Mm-hmm. But if they think there's something they can do to move a pitcher but also improve offensively, then maybe that might make sense for them.
All right, the Minnesota Twins, you know, and people know that I live there and I moved from that part of the country. Not a Twins fan, but certainly appreciate what they're doing this year. And I would really like to see them make some noise. The problem they've had when they've made the playoffs any time over the past 5 to 10 years is that they find themselves getting stuck playing the Yankees, and they can't beat the Yankees. And a lot of teams haven't been able to beat them, but the Twins have had particular trouble with them. Twins are 56-33. They're hitting the ball out of the park like, you know, it's ridiculous what they're doing. So do you believe, are the Twins, in your view, Mike, are they legit, or are they going to be another one of these teams that we see that has a great regular season, not just in baseball, but in sports in general? They have a great regular season, they get to the playoffs, and it just doesn't come together.
I think the Twins are legit. I think, in fact, I believe I wrote, because I put out our sort of mid-year power rankings today, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I believe I wrote the actual words about the Twins. They're legit.
You did.
And I think that you think of the Twins, and they may not have the, you know, the big name pitchers. Like, they don't have a Justin Verlander, you know, but Jose Berríos has been fantastic. Jake Odorizzi has been, you know, much, much better than he was last year. You know, those guys, I think, are really contributing. You know, I think that might be the place where there is a gap, though. We talk about pitching when we get into a short game or a short playoff series. But at the same time, the Yankees have the same pitching issues. You know, who's their best pitcher right now? You know, Tanaka's good, obviously, but they don't have Luis Severino. So they don't have their ace, and maybe he'll be back by the postseason, but maybe he won't. So I don't think that's necessarily a huge problem for the Twins, but I do think that is a place where they could, you know, theoretically improve. I don't know if they're going to go out and make a run at somebody like a Madison Bumgarner. You know, we've heard about Noah Syndergaard kind of being a piece of trade bait the last couple of days. So there are some people out there, but I mean, I'm curious to know. We don't really know much about the Twins and what they are willing to trade for, or sort of, you know, how that works. We've seen, you know, who they go after in terms of free agents and stuff, but I don't know. I'm curious to see, you know, what they'll do in this situation.
Talking with Mike Oz, Yahoo Sports does a great job as a writer there, as well as, of course, Old Baseball Cards, the creator of a wonderful video series. If you haven't seen it yet, what are you doing? Go check it out. All right, so I've talked about my mom on the program before. She is a huge sports fan. She is, God bless her, she's healthy. She's nearing 90, and she lives in Philly. And the woman will listen to sports talk till 2 in the morning. And she knows that you're coming on. She knows when you come on. And she said, would you talk to Mike? And she basically said this exact thing. Would you talk to Mike and please have him explain to me what is wrong with the Phillies? And I said, I'll put it to Mike, because, you know, they're 47-43. And all of my friends, you know, the folks down in South Philly are like, you know, we didn't bring this guy here to go 47-43. We should be wiping out everybody. So there's a lot of folks, friends of mine in South Philly, not happy right now. My mom's not happy either. What do you have on the Phillies?
No, that also sounded very Long Island.
Well, you know what? I lived in, my family's been there since 72. I'm going to tell you right now, the only way to talk true Philly is if I can say things that I'm not allowed to say on the air.
I think the pitching has been part of it. I'm curious to see what happens with Jake Arrieta.
Mm-hmm.
He has not been great lately, and they said something about he might be having, elbow problems. And you take him out of there, all of a sudden that rotation looks a lot more bleak. I mean, Aaron Nola's having a good year, but beyond that, there's nothing that is, super-duper exciting about in sort of a big picture. I still think the offense is good. It's not great. It could be great. I don't think we've seen nearly what we want to see out of Bryce Harper, of course. He's driven in some runs. He's got, a decent home run total, but given some of the home run totals around the league, you would think he might have more. It's not there. I think ever since they lost Andrew McCutchen, they just haven't been, performing as well as they could have. Jay Bruce has helped out. Not to the point of where they were. Let's remember, they were playing pretty good for a while.
Yeah.
They were good, but they weren't great. I mean, they've never been like, oh my God, these guys are world beaters. And I mean, I guess the good thing is I don't know that the Braves are ahead of them in the standings. I don't know the Braves are world beaters either. I think I like their lineup better, but their pitching, I think, is just as much of a question mark. So if the Phillies can if the Phillies go out and get a pitcher, let's say, and, Bryce Harper gets hot and Bryce Hoskins keeps hitting and somebody else, steps up a little bit in the offensive department, I think they could certainly get back into it.
Last thing for you. We've got a couple of minutes here. I've wanted to get to this for about 3 weeks now. You mentioned about a month or so ago, maybe a little bit more, that maybe we don't appreciate that Nolan Ryan's sixth no-hitter came at 43 years old. And that, listen, most guys pitch their entire career. Maybe a really good pitcher, not always a really great pitcher, will flirt with a no-hitter, but usually won't get one. Was there something in the way Ryan approached a game and each hitter that gave him a better chance to grab one? Because he's certainly not the only guy that ever threw heat.
No, I think, granted, I was very young when Nolan Ryan was doing this kind of stuff, so I certainly wasn't watching baseball the way I am now. I wonder if part of it was just the intimidation factor. Like at some point, I think when I played baseball, I know that there's a certain idea of if you're a pitcher and you're up there and you believe no one can hit you, and then the other team starts believing they're not going to hit you, then that's how it's going to go. And like, he was one of those guys where, sometimes he was on, sometimes he was off. But when he was on, it was like, man, you better watch out because, when he has the good stuff, he's potentially going to throw a no-hitter today. Kind of reminds me of, I guess, Max Scherzer in that way where it's like any given day he could throw a no-hitter. But, I mean, Max Scherzer I don't think has the he's never going to lose like 18 games in 1 year like Nolan Ryan did. But I think it was just that. I think it was just this sort of like, the idea that you can go out there and just, have whatever that gusto is that he had. I think that was it. Because you're right. I mean, it's not like he's out there throwing 103 miles an hour at 42 years old or whatever it was.
Folks, he is about. That's very well said. Yeah, because I did have a chance to watch him when he was much younger in his career, and there was a little bit of that Bob Gibson quality in him when he was out on the mound. It was facial. It was the whole body. It just he glared. He didn't make any gestures. He just glared at you, and you knew that he was looking at you. He is Mike Oz. Make sure you check him out at Mike Oz on Twitter. Also, Old Baseball Cards, the video series. A great writer. We have the fun of having him on every week. Mike, always a pleasure. Glad you traveled safely there and back, and we'll talk with you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. This is the CGP. Coming up in hour number two, our good friend Marty Lenz. We weren't in here yesterday, so Marty has been kind enough to join us coming up about 6 minutes from now. Lots to talk about. We'll talk about safety netting. One team during the All-Star break has done it. We'll talk about Mountain West. players honoring or not honoring contracts, as it were? And would you ever run with the Bulls in Pamplona? We'll find out. This is the CGP.
The studios of 940 ESPN in Fresno, California. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Hour number two, CGP, begins right now. 5 minutes, 35 seconds past the hour of 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. Glad to have you aboard. Do you like getting your car repaired? My goodness, I had to have mine repaired, and all I'll say is they did a fantastic job. The place that I went did an absolutely fantastic job, but you know the problem when your car gets older, and I know that I'm not breaking news here, I'm not telling any of you anything that you don't know, but when your car gets older, like mine is, more things happen, and the warranty is gone, so you start looking for a good place to get your car fixed, and you just, you know, it's like when you go to Target. You know you're not spending less than $100. If you do that, there's something's wrong with you. You'll find things that you want to buy just because you need to buy them. Just like if I go to a hardware store, listen, I grew up in kitchens. I know how to cook. I can cook with anybody. And when it comes to hardware and fixing things, forget about it. I am lame. I'm pathetic. It's embarrassing. I should trade in my card as a human being. I don't know how to do it. But I go up and down hardware aisles, and I just think, I think I could use that. I don't know what it is, but I think I can use it. It's a cool-looking tool. You have a toolbox, CG? Sure do. Can you give me the, I don't know if I have that. That's right there. It's on top. Oh, is that what it is? Okay. Yeah, I'm unafraid to admit that. Guy that I'm bringing on next, I think he's built homes by himself.
The Mountain West Conference has never been the same since this former wide receiver graduated from Colorado State. He holds the all-time season and career reception marks for... Wait. Sorry, no. That was a different receiver. Never mind then. Here's Marty Lenz.
You are very handy. I know that. Welcoming back to the show, Marty Lenz. Thanks for coming on a Thursday. You're very handy. I know you build things.
Actually, the closest thing I get to tool is being called a five-tool broadcaster.
Wow. I learned that phrase from you.
I co-opted it from baseball. But the reality is this. My father was not handy. He taught me the best tool to use was a telephone. Call somebody else to come and do something. Though I'm late, so we had a shower fix. And I won't bore you with too much of the details, but where the mechanism for the shower was behind some tiles. Well, by code, you're supposed to have access to where this mechanism where the shower thing is. So we had to take the tiles out. I built with magnets in one of our leftover cabinet doors. I have a nice door I'm looking at, and I was like, I'm pretty pleased with my work. I just had some sticky, good, strong magnets, put it on the door, and now you have free access. It covers it up, and it looks like a professional job. I am quite proud of myself for that.
As well, so. You should be, because I am, again, and I'm very proud to say it. You know, growing up in a restaurant family, I learned how to cook at a really early age, and, you know, I'll put my skills in a kitchen up pretty much anywhere. But when it comes to building, I know my limitations. I can't build things. And then when it comes to cars, no. Quick
cars
story.
Are too complicated, though, now.
Oh.
Even people I know that could get in there and monkey around because of the electronics and everything else, they can't. It's not like that with these newer cars.
Yeah, Marty,
an older one or an older truck.
Marty, it doesn't matter. I could be a 1975 car. I'll just give you a quick story. I was traveling cross country with a buddy of mine, and we got stuck in Iowa, and so I popped the hood, and I pull the car up. I'm just on the interstate, and I go around the front, and I'm standing there. And cars are going by, and then he gets out of the car, comes around, and goes, "What are you looking at?" I said, "I really don't have any idea." I just I feel like I need to be doing this because the car's not running, and there were no cell phones, so you know we had to walk to the off ramp and do all that, whatever. But I didn't know what I was. I've been looking at it like I should be looking at it. I don't know what I'm doing. So, yeah.
But the fact that you come from a restaurant family, wasn't your dad, since, you know, he owns and runs his own restaurant, he had to be somewhat handy because it's expensive to pay people.
No.
Even back in the day to do fixing
No. You know what my dad said? Yeah, you need a phone. Yeah. You need a phone. You call a guy. My dad can cook anything. His dad was a brilliant cook, and I mean, I learned from both of them. But my grandfather, he was the guy who was the fix-it guy. He could do that. But my dad, he can make any sauce, but he can't put anything together and can't fix things. And you call, because in New York, when I lived there, Marty, you call a guy. You call a guy.
Yeah.
There's always a guy. Just like taxes. I would be in jail if I had to do my own taxes. I take them to somebody else. You'd be visiting me. Well, maybe you wouldn't because you don't return text messages. But you would probably be, visiting me in a minimum security prison somewhere. Did I lose you?
I don't do my own taxes either. So I let a professional do it.
All right. Well, that's fine. Hey, have you ever built your own house though? Have you ever built your own house?
No, God.
All right, I'm just
asking. Kidding me? I have no skills in that area
all right.
at all. It's very, very screwdriver, hammer. That's about it. I don't, outside of tech arts when I was in high school and middle school, but no, never did anything like that.
All right, let's.
I made a cutting board. There you go.
Oh, well, that is impressive. All right. Nothing wrong with that.
A board, I stained it, and I shaped it with a jigsaw. Big flipping deal.
All right.
How about trading in your man card?
Well, I
never had one.
Your wife has told me that she watched you rip a tree right out of the ground once, so that's impressive.
Yeah, well, probably out of anger.
Well, that I would believe. That I would believe. I want to start with something a little lighter today, although it's, I don't know how light it is. I'm just going to ask you the question. If you had a chance, because you and your wife travel, would you run with the Bulls in Pamplona?
Hell no. That's a Darwin situation waiting to happen. And I know you're going with it. If I'm the Washington freaking Redskins, I call and I say, I'm cutting you right now, especially since he's underperformed as a player.
Talk about Josh Norman.
All this money. Yeah. It's just, I'd be very incredulous. It's kind of, that's one thing. And a lot of times, and you probably talked about this, in some of these contracts, you have, I guess they're called safety clauses. Like you said, you're not allowed to go skiing or ride a motorcycle or skydive or those sorts of things. Now you have to put in, you can't run with the Bulls, you can't swim with sharks or whatever the hell it is. Besides putting yourself at jeopardy, but it's arrogant of a person who's making that kind of money, and you've got to have a certain responsibility to your team, and again, especially if you're underperforming. I mean, I do wonder if he was playing at the height and he had a better season last year, but if he was playing really great in Pro Bowl, I'd still be, you'd probably be even more pissed off. But you say, you know what, he's playing so good for us right now. Everything he touches turns to gold. But the fact that he's not and he's over there, you're asking for trouble and asking for a bad situation to happen. But even as a layperson, fascinated by it, never want to do it. Last thing I want to do is, get gored by a bull.
I'm not even fascinated by it because I watch these guys do this, and I watch it every year. And it's not – a lot of people think that it's just they let the bulls out and they run once. No, this goes on for a bit of time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's already been – 5 people that have been gored during this year's bull runs. They began on Sunday. It's like 9 days. But I'm trying to understand. So you wear the white outfit. That must be some traditional thing, Marty. You wear the white so that I guess if you get gored, the blood
you can get the blood more.
Yeah, right, you see the blood more. Yeah. It matches the scarf around your neck and around your wrist. But I'm just thinking to myself. Okay, so I was a basketball player. I was never really a football player. I played, we played tackle in the backyard and stuff, but I'm not a thrill seeker. I'm not the jump out of the plane guy. I'm not the guy that's going to go swimming with sharks in a cage. That's not going to be me. I'm sure as heck not going to be running down a street with bulls that can gore me and shred me up like a meat slicer. I mean, what do you think the mentality is? Is there a price that somebody could pay you? I mean, within reason, is there a price that somebody could pay you to get you to do that?
Oh, everybody has their price. I don't know. Maybe if you pay me his contract, give me $36 million, I'd consider doing it.
Would you?
But as just, maybe for that kind of money.
Right.
And if you're semi-athletic and in decent shape, I mean, if I wasn't in decent shape, if I were a big tub of goo, I probably wouldn't do it.
Well, you're not a tub of goo.
But
you're a chiseled, guy.
Well, thank you. I'm vain for 51, so I try to keep.
Why do you always have to throw your age out? Are you trying to? You always throw the age out with me just to remind me that I'm older than you.
I'm getting AARP mail already. It's kind of course. My wife gets the big.
I got it at 19 because of gray hair. So it's
that's the Greek thing. So yeah, I if the money were right, I'd consider it. That doesn't mean I'd be locked, but I would consider it. And here's the thing. You saw when he jumped him. The Bulls aren't
yes,
in the arena. You're
yes.
not running down the streets of Pamplona at that point. I guess they're already in the arena. So it's not like you're trying to jump him at, you know, full gallop or when you're running with everybody else. There'd have to be some provisos in there for me to say, okay, for me to really do this, what is the realities? What's our, you know, those sorts of things. It's not that I'm risk averse. I don't like premature death. That's why, especially
well, no,
lately,
really...
we've had some – skydiving accidents here, and I'm like, I used to think that I'd want to do that, and now I'm like, I don't think I want to.
Can we just talk about, I don't think the risk averse has anything to do with it. I think the whole premature death thing, listen, we're all going to go at some point, and you hope that it's some quiet way, whatever, but I know in my life, I try to limit the amount of things that I might put myself in a negative situation. One of those, I had a producer once that wanted me to jump out of an airplane and with a camera going, and I thought, obviously she wants the show. She wants the program, so she's thinking, you know, maybe the shoot won't open.
She's next in line.
Yeah, exactly. She's next in line to the throne, to the A-chair. So I don't want to do that. I like to snow ski. I'm not one of these guys that does the back bowl in Aspen or in Snowmass whatever. I'm not doing that because I don't. My luck, it's an avalanche day, and I get buried, and it's all over. So.
And those people that do that are experts, by the way, and even the experts get caught and trapped in those things too.
All right.
So
Derek emailing CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. Derek saying, "I won't run with the Bulls, but I will sit and watch the Lakers." That's. Okay. Well, that's
pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Some say watching the Lakers of late would be, you know, as torturous as that.
Next year will be better.
You've got a point.
Yeah, next year will be better. All right. Last thing about the Bulls, because I'm just fascinated by this. A person says to you, I'll throw out a number here, Marty, we're going to give you $500,000 tax free, plus $1 million for you to run with the Bulls, and if you get Gord, we'll throw in an extra $1 million for your family.
Just gore me now. No, the deal is that it'd have to be north of $1 million. There's no way in hell it could be anything else. I'm not trying to get rid of you, by the way.
I just want you to know.
I know that
you have a dear place in this program.
I can't do it. It's got to be at least $1 million. There's no way. And that's what I'm saying. Josh Norman money, $36 million, like what he's got. Again, he didn't get paid that to run with the Bulls, but that's what he's earning. If I was in that thing, then I would seriously contemplate it. But, it'd have to be more than $500,000. So.
All right. Yeah, I pursued this in a way that I don't want anybody listening. Marty is – I love Marty like a brother. I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to get him, like, gone for some reason. That's not it. I'm just curious because everybody does have a price. And I don't know that there's a price, and I know somebody right now driving, you know, on the interstate into Denver, they're probably not listening to us, but on 41 or 99 here, would hear me say this and think that I'm just nuts, but I'm not sure that I have a price that's going to get me to put that little outfit on. I mean, I'm in pretty good shape and run down the street through those little narrow pathways because I'm worried that I'm going to trip on something, someone's going to bump into me, and I turn around, and there they come, and it's all over. I'm not getting away. This thing's going to use me, you know, it's going to be, just get ugly. Yeah.
Well, and let's put it this way. I mean, this discussion full circle. It would be irresponsible as us as husbands and fathers to put ourselves at risk like that if there's no money in the line. It's irresponsible of Josh Norman, who has so much money on the line. He's paid to put his body in jeopardy, but in a game that he's paid to do it. So when he's out recreationing and doing this and running at the Bulls, to me, that's just silly. But that speaks to a lot of pro athletes to where they feel indestructible and feel like they're invincible. And anyone else too, Christopher, it's probably the adrenaline rush.
Yeah,
some of these
yeah.
guys are probably adrenaline junkies, and they want that rush. They want that feeling and that excitement. And that's why you have base jumpers or people that do skydiving, people that take those risks because they need that adrenaline push. So maybe that's part of it as well. But I just, from a money standpoint, the fact that he's paid to put his body in a certain amount of jeopardy for a game, nobody's paid to do it, and he's doing it this way. I find that from a business standpoint irresponsible as hell. And if I were Dan Schneider and I never take his side on anything, I'd be really upset if I were him, and he has a right to be, if he would be or is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know. I don't disagree with any of that, and I don't want you to run with the Bulls. I'm not running with the Bulls. There is no price. So I just want to get that out of the way. I'm just curious what you thought. All right, coming up with Mr. Lenz, he's bull running free. We're going to talk about Boise State without Alexander Mattison and Brett Rypien. I'm finding some of the things that I'm reading and hearing about experts' thoughts on Boise State relative to Utah State, Fresno State, and San Diego State. Not to leave Colorado State out, because Colorado State actually come, that's Marty's alma mater, coming into the into Bulldog Stadium this year. I'm finding some of the things rather curious about Boise State. I want to bounce these off Marty. That's coming up next. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
We're talking with my good friend Marty Lenz. All right, Marty, we are going to move on, but Russ and I were just talking. I'm going to throw one last thing in the mix for you, okay?
Oh, God. Bull running, airplane diving all at the same time. What is it?
All right. It's don't sound so excited. All right. Just, you know, please note that Marty's getting bitter now. All right. You're, whatever amount of money you want to talk about, you have a choice. Running with the Bulls.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
It's almost like an old game of would you?
It is. It's like, let's make a deal.
God.
Do you want A or B, or do you want behind the
Hall.
Curtain? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Do you want running with the Bulls? What's behind door number two, or do you want to get in a shark cage and go underwater?
I bet you the shark cage would be safer, assuming it's metal and I don't know how deep I'd have to go. I don't know. I'm not going to do either, so it just doesn't seem realistic. But I guess if I had my druthers, I'd rather be in a shark cage and see a giant squid. That would actually really excite me. If I'm going to go, that's how I want to go, deep sea diving.
All right,
one of
those. Last thing I'm going to ask you about it. All right.
Okay.
Boise State is losing. Of course, they lose Alexander Madison this year. They have no Brett Rypien. They're going to be looking at Chase Cord, probably the sophomore, and maybe even a freshman that they're talking about. Fresno State, of course, Jorge Reyna. He's a senior. He's a graduate already, I believe. But he's going to be a starting quarterback. He's already been named by Jeff Tedford. You have some pieces coming back. Of course, you have pieces that have been lost in this team, namely Keyshawn Johnson. But do you see, I've been listening and reading a number of the experts, do you see Boise State, even though they're going to have a strong defensive line, a good offensive line, do you see them as a 10 or 11 win team, as some are predicting?
By the way, nice appearance with Julia Lopez on TV talking about Fresno State and talking about your boy. That was great.
Thank you.
That was really cool. Look, I think Boise State probably still gets a lot of love and respect because they're Boise State. And probably a lot of experts think they can fall out of bed and probably win at least 8 games. And if they have a decent quarterback, 9, 10, and probably compete for a title. But I think this may be, you know, even by their standards, maybe a rebuilding year a little bit for Boise State. And to your point, because one, Fresno State's the champ, and until somebody knocks them off, and it sounds like they've kind of reloaded pretty good, and you know better than me, they're the ones to beat. I think Utah State will fall back some, but they're still going to be pretty decent. But that's just more because they have a change at the top with Matt Wells leaving. San Diego State's probably going to be resurgent a little bit. Still a question mark is with my Rams. Not exactly sure. Hopeful as always, but you never know. But I'm just looking at it realistically, at least on the mountain side of things. You know, Fresno's coming out of the west side, so it's probably going to be them and SDSU. But on the mountain side, which has usually been a little more of a tougher division. I mean, you could still probably point to Boise saying they'll probably come, you know, they probably will come out of the mountain side of things, or they should be favored to do it just based on some of the other things going on, probably looking at them in Utah State. But as for winning the conference overall, no, that path still goes through Fresno. So if the experts are thinking that, especially when they're not looking at the situation and the stability that Tedford's brought, the recruits you guys have, the guys coming back, I mean, if they're saying that somehow Boise's on that same level with Fresno State, that's just not accurate. That's them not doing more due diligence on the rest of the league, and in particular, giving Fresno enough credit for what they did last year, even though it's a new season. But the fact that they're going to build upon it, more than likely, I just don't think, you know, Boise's going to be the normal Boise we're used to seeing.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. I mean, they're always going to be good. Brian Harsin's a good coach, but
them competitive. I mean, again, there's stability there and there's legacy there. So I'm not diminishing that by any means. That's what I'm saying. They could probably fall out of bed and win 7 and 8 games, and then if they get decent quarterback play, then you're talking 9. Maybe 10, and you know, and things go your way. So I'm not saying that, you know, Boise is going to be a 5 or 6 win team. I think that's silly. I say it's going to be a rebuild from their perspective that they're not probably an elite team this year in the way the Mountain West is shaping up. So I don't see them challenging, possibly, but I don't see them challenging quite in the same way. So
yeah, one of the teams we talked to, when I talked to the guys on Vegas Stats and Information Network today, one of the things that we talked about Fresno State, San Diego State, Boise State, and Utah State, and then they threw one team at me that I was ready for, but I thought it was an interesting team to mention. And they've been mentioned a lot out here by a number of people that I spoke to, and that is Hawaii. You know, here's a team that averaged almost 31 points a game. They've got their QB coming back. I mean, this is a team, obviously, they know how to score some points. I don't know that they're going to win the West, but they're not going to beat Fresno State in terms of winning the West, but I think they're going to be very competitive this year. They have been the last couple of years.
No, I think so, too. I think they caught, if there was a surprise team last year, it was Hawaii. And here's why. Hawaii is always tough on the island. Traditionally, they're terrible on the road. Last year, they were good on the road. They came to Fort Collins, first game of the year, conference, and they beat us and beat us. When I say handily, we came back and made it close and had a few chances, but I mean, they ran the ball. They ran a really good, efficient offense. There was nothing gimmicky about it. They're big. They're physical. Yeah, I mean, I think they're, again, ready for prime time. Right, they're in the West. I don't think they're going to leapfrog Fresno State, but this is a team that maybe has a puncher's chance. It's going to be a bowl team again. I think that's a very good assessment. We have a tendency to forget about Hawaii because they're out in the Pacific, but yeah, absolutely. Hawaii's going to have a pretty good team again this year.
Give me again, because we almost got to Colorado State. We did mention Colorado State, your alma mater. Of course, you played for them. We mentioned the fact that the schedule for Fresno State is, I mean, it's all things being equal, and it's a little bit relative, that they don't have to play Boise State. The Utah State is probably the toughest game, even with, you know, getting a new coach, Gary Anderson, what have you. They still have Jordan Love at quarterback, who's terrific. They come into Bulldog Stadium. That's a big game. San Diego State, that game's on the road. Rocky Long still looking for more diversity in his offense. But Colorado State back on the schedule for Fresno State. Give me your assessment on your Colorado State Rams this year.
You know, they're a question mark, and it's really not a question mark of talent. I mean, I hate to say this, but it's going to be a character test. Last year was Coach Bobo was not healthy, and I think that's a lot of it. So I chalked that up. He was dealing with neuropathy with his leg. I've talked to him and seen him a couple times since then. He looks better. I can tell from a spiritual, emotional standpoint, he's what he was when he first came here. There's the energy, there's the spark, there's the fire. And he's told me it's about accountability this year. I think he feels really good about the talent. The talent's not been the issue, but it's getting the guys all pulling in the same direction. And frankly, it's getting guys to play without the ego, playing for one another as opposed to playing with themselves. And you and I have talked about that. I mean, I love sometimes getting these transfers from these big Power Five schools, and they're decent guys, but a lot of times they're just coming in looking to get their stats and go, and not really being a part of the team fabric. And I'm not judging anyone on that, but that seems to be what has happened of late. So I think Coach is really, you know, focused now on the discipline, pulling together, all on the same page, fighting for one another. It's bigger than just one person. It's the team. You know, it's a lot of the coach speak. We always hear that. But I think there's a sincere, concerted effort. Having said that, you know, we can't get out of the – we joke about we were so sick of finishing 7-6, we decided to finish 3-9 last year. But, I mean, this is a team that I think can win 7 or 8 games. I'd love to say they're going to compete for a title. I just don't think they're still there. I think Colin Hill he's back to 100%. But we got to see what other weapons he has. We're going to have a good running game. We haven't had one in a while. And defensively, there's a lot more questions, too. So we've got some changes on that side of the ball. But I think we got the right players. We'll just see if they can get all pulling together. But, you know, if they can get out of the gate, get a couple good wins, and be right there in the mix, then they have a puncher's shot. But I don't see them finishing any higher than maybe second.
Okay.
Right now in the Mountain Division. So
we're talking with my good friend Marty Lenz. We're going to come out to talk next with Marty about players and contracts and what happened to the days of players actually honoring their contract versus coming up a year or two short and saying, you know, if I don't get what I want, I'm holding out, I'm done, I want you to trade me, you guys are garbage. That's raised its ugly head once again. We'll talk with Marty about that coming up next. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
So hold my hand now. We're talking with Marty Lenz, KOA News Radio. He's an award-winning host, award-winning show, Colorado's Morning News. Him and April Zespa do a great job out there. Marty, the news comes out that Melvin Gordon wants a new deal or he'll skip training camp and demand to be traded. He's going to make is expected to make $5.6 million this year. It's the final year of his rookie contract, and, you know, he's demanded to be traded. He wants a new deal. I don't know. I don't know if it's even old school, if we can call it old school, just saying you sign a deal, you know, no less an authority on this than Michael Jordan, never renegotiated a contract, ever. I mean, the majority of the money that Michael Jordan made was on his Nike and endorsement deals, but never once renegotiated a contract. He signed, he got paid, and he honored the contract. I don't understand this new wave of players now. I get it. They're looking for leverage. They're trying to make as much money as they can in the shortest amount of time because careers don't last forever. Still, what happened to honoring what you signed with your own hand?
Well, but I throw that back and saying the contracts aren't always honored by the other end, and I think the players just want more control. It doesn't mean I necessarily agree with Melvin Gordon or Le'Veon Bell, but I understand it because these teams can cut you, move you, and do what they want with you, because in many ways you're property to them because they have you that way. So I just think it's, in the case of Gordon, him trying to get more leverage, or anybody, more control, more freedom to move and do these things. And I think when you see guys like Le'Veon Bell sit out, I think other players say, I can take that tact too and do it. Now, for some people, it may backfire, and we don't even know how it's going to work for Le'Veon Bell with him in the Jets. You know, I don't know about, you know, what the situation is completely with Melvin Gordon. I don't know if he's maybe dissatisfied with San Diego. But I got to tell you this right now, in many ways, the Chargers need his services more than he needs the Chargers. Phillip Rivers is long in the tooth, and he doesn't have many years left, you know, to be in the prime to get a shot of going deep in the playoffs, let alone getting to a Super Bowl and maybe winning one. So maybe he sees this opportunity saying, you need me. I'm the young stud. I'm the horse that can carry it and help out. You know, treat me as such or pay me as such, or I'll go out and see if I can leverage myself to go somewhere else.
So when you say that the contracts aren't honored by the other end, what are you suggesting? Because teams trade guys all the time. Teams make deals for guys all the time. But teams aren't going to their players and saying, you know, you've got 1 year left, but we'd like to actually renegotiate that and give you $3 million less. You don't see a lot of teams doing that.
No, and you're right. But I'm just saying, but it's the access and the movement and the fact that a lot of these contracts, unlike, I guess, the NBA, for example, they're not guaranteed. And so, and you get your money up front, and then after that, they can change, renegotiate, cut, move you. So I think in many ways it's the players trying to say, hey, two can play that potentially. And so they try to protect their interest by saying, you can relieve me anytime, or even as the player, I could break my leg at any time. So I'm trying to max out what I can, knowing that you know, the sport's only temporary, especially as a running back. I mean, the shelf life in the NFL for running back is, what, 2.5, 3.5 seasons? So probably a guy like Melvin Gordon's got a little wear and tear on him, even as a young guy, you know, playing in that offense. So I think he just looks, and his agent looks and says, let's push this now while I'm still in my prime versus waiting later to see if I can get something when I'm maybe not as good. It doesn't mean I agree with it, but I understand and see some of the logic with it. But when I hear about honoring contracts, then I say, well, sometimes these organizations have to honor them in return, and not, they don't always.
Yeah, I I get what you're saying. I mean, I do.
It's hard to feel sorry for either side in this, but I'm saying I understand some of it.
Yeah, but the thing is, where I don't get it, and he's not the first, Melvin Gordon's not the first, but he's the most recent, so we'll use him as an example. Here's a guy who he came out, he got drafted, he signs a rookie contract, everybody signs a standard rookie contract, and you get paid a certain amount based upon where you're drafted. He's making $5.6 million for the year. That is not bad money, and I'm not understanding where he believes that he should get a new deal when, in fact, he plays a year, he can demand even more the following year, or is he banking on the fact that he's going to get injured and thinking, I'm going to cover myself ahead of time? Because it gets to a point where if I'm a team, you know, you wonder in the collective bargaining agreement when the next contract or the next CBA agreement comes due, you wonder if owners are going to say, you know what, we have so many guys now wanting to renegotiate deals that we're going to we want to change the language of the rookie contract. We don't want it to be 4 years. We want it to be 3 years. We don't want it to be 3 years, and so on. I guess I don't have the sympathy for a Melvin Gordon that you have.
Well, my thing is, maybe he looks at it, and I'm sure he has somebody crunching numbers. Maybe he looks at his market value and says, as compared to anybody else that's a peer of mine in this position, relative same age, maybe he has, and I don't know. I haven't looked into it. I'm not an analytics guy or nerd, or I just don't look at the stats. I haven't seen it. Maybe he says, my production based on this is worth more than this. Other rookies are in the same boat because they have that deal. But the standpoint of saying, I'm worth more, and so right now my value is more than this guy, but I'm not getting paid. And a lot of times we see guys saying, wait a second, I'm putting out greater stats, statistics, more wins than said guy who's got this deal. I need to at least be in that range. So maybe he's doing that. I don't know, but maybe that's what's coming out of it too, is looking at other running backs in similar situations, and he's head of the pack, and he's trying to leverage that now.
Yeah, okay, I guess. I mean, it makes me just wonder sometimes. You know, I came from the school of thought, and so did you, that you sign your name to something and you honor it. And there's always going to be movement from people who are doing a little better than you in terms of finances, sure, or in people who don't do quite as well as you. And there's always going to be that. It's like somebody signing a contract in 2017, and suddenly the going rate in 2019 is going to be a couple of, you know, maybe $1.5 million more a year. Maybe there's going to be an extra year attached to it. And how somebody sometimes is trying to apply parameters to something in 2019 those parameters weren't in place when he signed the contract 2 years ago. And there seems to be this, I think, this lack of understanding that things do change. And give it a year, and then you're going to be able to make up what you think you should be making.
Well, right, but then you also think there's the risk of injury. If he gets hurt, then he loses that year. So, and I think with certain positions like running back, where there is wear and tear, and again, the life site, you know, the shelf life for most running backs is, you know, 2 to 3 seasons. I think maybe they look at it and saying, I better get it while I'm healthy now than risking and waiting to do it and then having something happen. I'm conflating sports, but not everybody's going to be as magnanimous when you look at Kevin Durant, and I'm probably not the greatest comparison to Durant's, you know, world class at what he does. Melvin Gordon's a great player, but probably not elite yet. But, you know, he blows out his Achilles. He's not playing next year, and Brooklyn was willing to throw the money at him to do him. So not all organizations are willing to do that, especially in a sport like football. So I think some of these players look and say, I better get while I can and get what I can, and then, you know, go from there.
What is to stop these guys? I mean, eventually become – we're talking about Marty Lenz from KOA News Radio. On a different day that Marty normally comes on, we appreciate that he's coming on today, is because we were off yesterday. Do you ever, as a fan, when I say, does this concern you, because it's not going to affect you personally or me or Russ or anybody else one way or the other, but we talk about this. So does it concern you at all that theoretically there's nothing stopping every single player in the league to sign a contract and then 1 year later decide, you know what, I had a great year. I've got this team right in the palm of my hand. I'm going to demand a new deal. And at some point you wonder, will an owner or an ownership group say, you know what, I'm going to draw a line in the sand. I love you as a player. We love you. But you know what? You've got a couple of years left, and we're not going to do that. And if you want to go somewhere else, you want to sit out, you go right ahead, but you're not going to get a dime of your salary. I mean, you could also see that side of this happening as well.
Yeah. Well, no, of course. I mean, the Steelers did that with Bell. They were willing to let him walk. Some organizations will do that. And I always say the burden is probably more still on the ownership group. They're the ones that sign these deals. And granted, I know they have the CBA and, you know, the rookie contracts are what they're stated. So that's like a collective bargaining deal. But they're the ones that still pretty much control the traffic and the purse strings. As a fan, no, because two things. One, if your team is winning, I mean, and you, the days of having a guy stay there for 15, 20 years, as you know, are long gone. That's
right,
just not
right.
Going to happen. But if a team's winning, then that takes care of it as well. And I, maybe it's me, and maybe it's just because I'm a bit jaded on this, but stuff like this, when I see contracts, it just doesn't rise to a level of me enough as somebody who covers it and as a fan that I really care. I guess my point is now, I'm 51, in case I haven't pointed that out. I don't get emotionally invested with individual players, and I don't even probably get as invested with teams as much, professional teams. I mean, my investment with my alma mater is different, but I don't feel that. I'm just like, well, that's what's going to happen. That's fine. If the product's good on the field and I enjoy watching here and there, that's my end game. I'm just not that fervent in a fan just to care. Maybe it's because we know too much of this inside stuff we're talking about, movement, players, everything else. We know the business of it, and maybe it's just that, well, it's a business at heart, even though it is the entertainment business. But we maybe knowing those realities, I have a different take than being maybe a really passionate, fervent, disappointed fan.
No, and I get that. I mean, because I don't go down the road of what if he gets injured? Because you know what, that can happen in the first practice of the first year of the first contract, and so
totally.
It can, and I end up falling, Marty, on the side of, yeah, you sign a contract. Nobody was twisting your arm. You and your agent, your manager, everybody together, your wife, your family, everybody agreed on this, and then suddenly a couple of years later, you know what? This isn't good enough. It's not enough money. And yeah. I get frustrated with the plethora of athletes now that do that. And then it ends up being a big thing. Well, not always, but it ends up largely being a big thing. And there's bad feelings. And a player often sullies his own reputation simply because he comes off appearing greedy, whether he is legitimately or not, or whether he has a legitimate claim or not. I just think why not run your contract out? I know I've sort of beat this to death, but I don't understand it because it happens all the time now.
You're looking at it through the prism of a regular people like us. We can't look at it that way. It's a different hierarchy. It's a different ball of wax. So if you're talking to, and I'm just generalizing, whether it's radio people like us who sign deals, if it's a plumber or whoever else, that's a totally different realm that we're talking about versus professional athletes. So when you talk about signing and honor, yes, there's honor in whatever you do, but it's a totally different widget and ballgame. So to compare it, and I'm not saying you are, but to think of it in the level as regular guys, you know, that go out, drink beers, watch the game versus the athletes doing it, you can't compare it that way. It's almost an apples to lug nuts comparison about the money, the impact, the risk, reward, and everything that's going on with it there. So it's a different realm. It's hard for that to translate, you know, from where we're at to up there.
Can you imagine, and it is a different realm, can you imagine you go to your bank and you're buying a house and you get 5.5%, and you get 5.5 on a fixed rate, on 30 years on fixed rate. 2 years into your fixed rate, into your contract, your bank comes back to you, the bank of the lens, you know, we'll call it that, comes back and says, you know what, economy has changed a little bit. I know you have a fixed rate, you have a contract, it's 30 years, but we're changing 5.5. We're going to change that to 6.5 now. You're okay with that, right?
Well, but that's, again, it's different. You're talking about borrowing money.
No, I get it.
That's a different contract.
Right,
but
I'm saying,
for their talent. I'm setting up an example
that obviously has floating parameters. I'm just saying when you sign a deal, I guess the bigger point that I'm making is that when you sign a deal, irrespective of what the deal is, you expect all parties engaged to honor that deal. And then when something happens to change that, I always wonder, really? It was good 2 years ago. Why isn't it good now? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, maybe. But, time, you know, 2 years later, things change. Dynamics change. Marketplaces change. That's probably one.
All right. One more segment with Marty Lentz coming up. And one team in Major League Baseball has extended the safety netting. And I keep asking the same question. Why hasn't every team done it? Why couldn't every team have done it, or at least started to do it during the All-Star break? That's next. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Another couple of minutes with our good friend Marty Lentz, co-host of Colorado's Morning News, KOA News Radio out in Denver, Colorado. The White Sox have begun and almost completed putting up the new safety netting, which will go from the end of the dugout all the way down to the foul pole. I believe it's going to be in sort of a, I saw some pictures of it today, the Chicago Tribune, a little kind of a cascading style where it kind of slopes its way down towards the foul, each foul pole. And interesting, Rob Manfred said, we recognized early in this process that it was very difficult to set an individual rule, one rule that applied to 30 different ballparks given their structural differences. That seems just ridiculous to me, Marty. There's a lot of things that they are able to do these days, being that it's 2019, and when they made the decision, or everybody sort of got together without officially coming out and agreeing together, saying we're going to do the safety netting, if the White Sox, if one team can do it, why not every team just, I keep asking the same thing, why not every team come out and say they're going to do it? And the only thing that I can think of is that there remain teams out there that are getting pushback from their fans.
Yeah, well, again, how many times have you heard me say this phrase? This is a will thing, not a skill thing. And so maybe, it's going to take some litigious thing to happen, maybe some tragic thing that is litigious to
finally, it has,
but maybe at a greater case, no death is good, but the one was older. What if it's a young child? Now that one young child was seriously hurt, but is recovering. But what if it's a young child that this happens to? This is just silly that they're not doing this. And I'll give you an example, and I'm not trying to impugn them here, but we've tried to talk to the Rockies for comment on this. And of course, we're the Rockies station. So we're not looking to sandbag or anything like that, but we're going to ask serious questions. What's the deal? They don't want to talk to us about it.
Incredible.
They've politely just declined to say anything. And I'm like, I'll talk to Jeff Breidich, who's the GM. I'll talk to the people that maintain the field. I'll talk to Dick Monfort. I'm just curious what their philosophy is, because to me, If you and I say this and I'm not picking on them, anybody, but if there's a real reason behind it, tell us why and be honest and say, look, our paying customers don't want it. You cannot agree with that, but at least you know honestly why they're not doing it. To me, when you kind of obfuscate and you don't address the issue, then there's a bigger problem there. And that's something that I find a bit problematic. And I think Rob Manfred should just come out, and maybe he doesn't have to say you all need to do it, but he could say I highly suggest that we do this and get it done pronto and get it done soon. Or at the very least saying, fine, there's only 75 games left or however many, but next year this is going to be done. We'll start in spring training or start, in the early part of the year when we come back to the ball clubs before the year, and we're going to get this done and get it taken care of. To me, there's no reason not to do it. It's just this is sometimes where baseball is behind the times. And many, many ways, I wonder, maybe not this instance, why they lose fans. They're not updating. They don't change. They're stuck in their ways. So,
right.
And I got to tell you this too. You never blame the customer, but sometimes you tell the customer, no, you're wrong. I know you're paying, but you're wrong in this. Safety is more important than your being able to see a ball unobstructed.
Rob Manfred is being disingenuous when he says, well, there's all these different clubs and we can't make one rule for it. That's ridiculous. He comes out just like every other commissioner in professional sports, whether it's Adam Silver or Gary Bettman or Roger Goodell, and they make these proclamations in their state of the league address, and they make some proclamation, a definitive statement that covers the whole league. And for him to come out now and say, well, these are individual parks and there's a lot of structure, that's just a bunch of doublespeak. You can't tell me otherwise, you meaning anybody, that he's not getting pushback from some of his owners saying, we've got to work through some things from our fans who are paying $1,200 a seat behind the home plate. You know what? Then go ahead and do it. Lower the price or get new fans in there.
Well, right, and here's the thing. He does serve at the pleasure of the owners for the most part. So, he answers, to a board, and he has 30 bosses. So I get that, but also I would just sit there and say, guys, I'm going to pull you kicking and screaming because this is the betterment of the game, making the game as safe as possible and still as enjoyable as possible. And so, I would like to have an owner or somebody just go on the record and say, why haven't you done it yet? Or the ones that have, why have you done? I would like to hear that. But maybe I think they want to try to present a united front, the thing like, well, we are looking into it. We're going to try to make it safer, but doing so in such glacial steps. It's a very simple solution. Again, skill. It's about will. It's not about skill.
All right, we'll just end this where we started. Marty, would you go down in a shark cage?
Oh, God.
Or would you go down the Amazon in a boat without a weapon?
Well, if there's piranha in the Amazon, as long as
well,
stay in the boat.
I guess they're not going to come in the boat, are they? They're not going to flop in the boat, unless they're a little idiot ant, idiot piranhas.
Yeah.
They don't know.
So, yeah.
All right.
No, I'll stay away from all that.
I'm going to send you a list of about 30 of these, and just I'll let you work through it. Folks, I hope you listen to him now and then. He's on in the mornings. He's great. Marty Lenz and April Zespa co-host Colorado's Morning News on Denver's News Leader, Colorado's Morning News. Marty, former football player, Colorado State wide receiver. Marty, always great fun. I appreciate you joining us today. We will hook up with you again next week, my friend.
Fantastic. Thank you. Is it too early to say go Rams?
Just get out of here, would you please? Jeez, five tool. Get out. Coming up, hour number three. This is the CGP.
The Top 5 at 5 is sponsored by the Law Office of Josh Lazar and Associates. And now, from Fresno, California, to the furthest reaches of the galaxy, here are your Top 5 at 5 sports talkers of the day.
Top 5 at 5. Just noticed that our monitor and our... Somebody just flipped the switch. Somebody just flipped the switch in the outside area. Our TV just went off. So I don't know who does that every day. Somebody does that. Every single day. It's a big, big, huge sign that says, do not turn off, and yet somebody turns it off every day. Top 5 at 5. It's the little things, folks. It's the little things. Five stories. Some of these, looking through these, some of them you've heard. We've talked about one of these, I believe, today. Yeah, just one of these. So four that we haven't talked about, one that we have talked about.
Number one.
Well, Serena Williams, she defeats Barbara Strakova, and that gets her to her 11th Wimbledon final. She beats Strakova in straight sets 6-1, 6-2. She had no trouble taking her out. And you think about her, you think about the career that she's had, 11 Wimbledon finals. And, I mean, this is... You know, you have the opposite ends of the spectrum here, because you have her opponent in the final from Romania. She's a woman named Simona Halep. It might be Halep. You have to forgive me, because I don't follow tennis, full confession, as much as I follow a lot of other sports. Certainly follow it once we get to the semifinals or finals of the majors. But Simona Halep, it's her first trip to the Wimbledon final. It's her first Romanian who's ever reached a final. And you have Serena Williams, who right now has 23 Grand Slam singles titles, and she is just one behind Margaret Court, the great Margaret Court, who had 24. And you, to put that record in perspective, if Williams beats Halep, that record has stood for 46 years. I mean, 46 years. And for Williams... You know, of course, she had her first child, and, you know, this is the longest gap between majors in her career. The last major that she won was the Australian Open in 2017. And it's funny because, different sports, different everything, but if you look at it compared to, say, the gap that Tiger Woods had between winning majors, it's, relatively speaking, it doesn't seem like it's that long, but for her and for those who... I've certainly heard McEnroe talk about this, saying it's been an eternity. Doesn't seem like it's been an eternity, but you know, she had some postpartum complications after birth and what have you. And I mean, she really dealt with some things across the board, both physically and mentally. But I mean, she was I didn't realize that she was bedridden for as long as she was. She was bedridden for 6 weeks, but she is back. She's playing great, and she is going to tie Margaret Court's record this weekend.
Number.
I've never pronounced his name right. Jim Bouton? Jim Bouton. You know, he's, of course, the famous author, former baseball player, former New York Yankees pitcher. Of course, he wrote Ball 4. He has died. He was 80 years old. And this is someone who he fought a brain disease that was linked, in his case, to dementia. He was in hospice care. A couple of years ago, more like 7 years ago, he had a couple of strokes. But I remember, I was a little kid, but Ball 4 came out back in the early 70s, and this was a groundbreaking book as sports books went. The only other big baseball book that came out around then, actually came out a few years later, was a book called Vita, about Vita Blue. But this was a little bit different. This was a book that Bouton, I mean, he talked about, and forgive me if I'm saying his name right, it's been years since I've mentioned him, but the book centered around Mickey Mantle and just the partying, the carousing that Mantle, undertook in New York. And the biggest part was the use of, and back then they called them stimulants in the major league. I mean, it was a tell-all, revealing book about baseball off the field, and it was an eye-opener. I mean, he was doing, you know, when he had retired, he was doing some of the late-night circuit. But he, you know, this is a guy that took a mental beating for this. I mean, you had, he was a bestseller, but you had former teammates, you had players throughout the league, you had executives across all of Major League Baseball, essentially putting him through the meat grinder. I mean, they ostracized him for all the things that he said. He was saying, listen, you don't have that right to expose our secrets. This is stuff that's behind closed doors. These are clubhouse things. You don't break that, we'll use the term from theater, the fourth wall. You don't break the fourth wall. Well, he did. He did. This was a guy who was 21-8 in 1963. He had 6 shutouts that year. Second season in the majors, he went 18-13. Had another 4 shutouts in 1964 as well. But Yankees lost the World Series both times that year. He was never really the same dominant pitcher as he from his first year. I wouldn't call him dominant his second year, but he was certainly a good pitcher. Then he had an injury in 1965, went 4-15. Things kind of went downhill. And really not a lot of, you know, I mean, he tried to make a comeback. Years later with the Atlanta Braves in 78. He went 1-3. He was age 39. Think about what we said earlier, Nolan Ryan's throwing up with Mike Oz, throwing a no-hitter at 43. But, you know, he had a 10-year career, 62-63, a 3.57 ERA. Nothing really to write home about. He wasn't somebody who was, you know, ever going to be remembered as one of the great dominant pitchers of all time. But the book left his place. He left his mark in history, for better or for worse, with his best-selling book, Ball 4.
Number 3.
Boy, you haven't heard a lot about David Ortiz. You've heard of the Top Hour Sports Center update, certainly, but he had his third surgery a little bit earlier this week from the gunshot wound that he had suffered last month down in the Dominican Republic. And what they are saying, what his wife said was that it was complications. She didn't mention, nobody associated with Ortiz, nobody at the hospital mentioned what the complications were that led to the third surgery, or that had gone on between surgeries. But his wife, Tiffany, did say that he is, quote, recovering well and in good spirits. The second surgery, he had the first surgery on June 10th or June 9th? And then the second surgery was the next day. And the complication, I wouldn't even begin to know. I couldn't even speculate what the complications were. There could be so many different things. But she went on, his wife Tiffany went on to say, we continue to be incredibly appreciative of the kindness and compassion shown to David and to our entire family during this difficult time. Boy, you wish him the best.
Number 4.
Well, Boogie Cousins has spoken, and he has said that he's pretty happy about being with the Lakers. He said that this is a dominant team. There's no surprise there. He said part of the reason why I wanted to become teammates again, talking about him, going to the Lakers with Anthony Davis. I said we realized how much better we made one another and how much we made the game easier for each other. We both appreciate each other's presence. And you look at this team, and he said, you know, to add LeBron to the mix. Not really adding LeBron to the mix, but I see what he's saying. But, you know, you have a team now of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and, of course, Boogie Cousins. You toss in JaVale McGee, Quinn Cook, Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green. Avery Bradley. And, you know, on paper, this is a pretty good team. Now, I talked to Alan Sliwa earlier in the week, and of course, Cousins signed a one-year, $3.5 million deal. He signed a $5.3 million deal when he signed with the Golden State Warriors. And you will remember, you know, it's easy to look at his year and, you know, coming off the Achilles and then tearing a quad muscle. And it's easy to look at him and say, well, he didn't really do much. But if you look back at the stats that he had this year, in the 30 games that he played, he averaged 16.3 and 8.2 rebounds. And, I mean, this is a guy, in come March and April, this is a guy that really started to hit his stride. I remember in one of the playoff games, a couple of the playoff games, I mean, he had a double-double. You know, I mean, he had 11 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists in Game 2. He had 14 points, 6 rebounds in Game 5. Those were both victories of the Warriors. I mean, you can't deny the kind of effect that he had on this team. And, yeah, back in March and April, he really was starting to hit his stride. And here's a guy that when he is healthy, you know, he is worth, by NBA standards, he is worth a lot more money. No question about that. But this is where I differed with Alan Sleeber earlier in the week when Alan was saying he felt bad for Boogie Cousins. I get it that Boogie felt that he was worth $10 or $15 or $20 million. But reality being what it is, it wasn't going to happen. There's people, you know, we're closed now. There's people outside the front door looking in here like, we're going to stop the show and we're just going to go, you and I will go out there and we'll welcome him in, give him a beverage. Just, my goodness. But yeah, he just wasn't going to get $10, $15, $20 million. It just wasn't going to happen. But on paper, if this team, I mean, if these guys stay healthy, and I mean, you look at LeBron and AD, toss in Rajon Rondo, and certainly, the maturation of a guy like Kyle Kuzma, who I think is going to be, can be a huge star in this league. Danny Green certainly showed himself to be a guy who can hit shots from anywhere when needed. Hit him on the biggest stage in the biggest moments. And, you know, KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, JaVale McGee had good minutes for this team last year. This is a team that can do some damage. I still think the Clippers are going to be a little better than them. And Tony D had asked me who I think would go to the championship between the two. I'm sorry, Julia Lopez asked me on Bulldog Insider in the first segment who I thought would go. And I said, well, that's if one of these two teams goes to the championship. I don't think it's a given that either of these two teams are going to be, you know, a rock-solid bet to make it to the NBA Finals. But I mean, they're certainly going to be up there, but I think we need to see them play first, see how everything meshes before we anoint one or the other as an NBA finalist, or for that matter, say that they're going to be 1 and 2 in the conference and find their way to playing each other in the Western Conference Final. Wouldn't that be something, though? I mean, that is kind of a delicious thought, isn't it? To imagine a Western Conference, not if you're a Warriors fan or Utah or Portland or Houston, certainly, but imagining a Lakers-Clippers Western Conference Final, a best of 7 in one building where I'd just like to be part of the crew, of the arena crew, where, you know, after the first two games, you're switching the floor. After the second two games, you're switching the floor again. And then you're going back and forth 3 times. That sounds like a fun job.
Number 5.
Well, we talked about this earlier, and I kind of pushed it a little bit with Marty because I wanted to see how much fun we could have with this. But, yeah, we were talking about Josh Norman, cornerback of the Washington Redskins. And you've seen the video. If you haven't, check it out. You can see him. You don't see him running with the bulls, but you see him leaping over a bull inside of a bull ring where there's matadors and non-matadors, people everywhere, you know, with the white shirt and pants, the red scarf around the neck, the red scarf tied around the wrist. And he said the following. He said, I had to face the bull straight on. It was fun. It was worth it. It was really worth it. And, you know, there's photos that have been tweeted out. There's certainly been videotape. But it was, you know, about 3 years ago when he was with the Carolina Panthers on a Charlotte radio station. He said that running with the Bulls was something that he had wanted to do most of his life. It was absolutely a bucket list item. I tend to, and this is what we said earlier, I tend to gravitate more towards the other part of the story, the fact that these runnings of the Bulls began on Sunday, you know, 4 days ago, 5 days ago, and you've had 5 people gored already, so you're averaging 1 a day. Goes on for another 4 days. The San Fermín Fiesta, I don't know. I've known people who, I've never known anybody who's run with the Bulls. I've known a couple of people who went there to Pamplona to watch it. Do you have to know somebody along the route? Do you have to know somebody to get into one of those little balconies? Is it like being on Bourbon Street when you watch big celebrations on Bourbon Street and you have to know somebody or be staying at one of the places to be on one of the balconies overlooking Bourbon Street? where, you know, there's mayhem on Bourbon Street, and then there's people relaxing with a glass of champagne or a beverage or something. You know, maybe Pat O'Brien sends one of their favorite famous drinks up in the glass. People are relaxed, and they're wearing pearls, and they're wearing ascots. I mean, how do you become one of the people who's in the balcony in Pamplona, and you see these sometimes, and you see the runners go by, you see the bulls running, and sometimes I've seen kids on at least a couple of the balconies. I mean, do you want to take the chance that your son or daughter is going to see somebody get run over or gored by a bull? I mean, I don't know. It's not like it's, how do I say this? It's not like it's happening, you know, it's wantonly happening, but five gorings in 5 days is enough for me. You're averaging one a day. Are you, if there's 50 runners and you know, I mean, do they tell you? All right. Just so you know, the way the odds work this year right now, one of you will get gored today. It's not something I want to deal with. I'm not a bull runner. I'm not a plane jumper. You know, I'm not a skydiver. I want to have ground under me. That's why Russ and I were talking. That's why I threw this at Marty. Are you doing the running with the bulls? Are you going down underwater in a shark tank, in a shark cage? Which one would you choose? I don't like either option. Don't like either option. I'm more comfortable on land than I am under the water. I mean, I can swim, but I've got no shot against the bull. I've got no shot against the shark, but I feel like I would have more of a shot, not against the bull, but running from the bull. I mean, you're in a crowd, and maybe the bull doesn't notice you. Maybe you roll to the side if you get tripped up, and the bulls go right by. They don't bother you. The shark, it's you and him. Is it a him? It's just you and him. And I'm not out swimming him. Top 5 at 5.
More of the Christopher Gabriel program right now on 940 ESPN.
Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk with Coach Q. Always feels like it's been so long since we've talked with him. It's only been a week. And then tomorrow, of course, Friday morning, 7 a.m., join us. We'll have our encore of the week, and we will also have Nick Shager. And working on somebody at 8:05. We'll let you know how that works out sometime tonight or tomorrow morning. But you know, when it's about 5:26 and it's a Thursday, normally we give you awkward press conference moments. But we did miss yesterday, which was Don't Be That Guy. And I don't know, toss up between the two. Russ, surprise me.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Don't be that gal. You don't want to be either of them. You don't want to be doing something by yourself or with a group of people where somebody is looking at you and says, you don't be that guy. This was one that was submitted by one of our listeners through Twitter, and we appreciate that. We will take all submissions. We get submissions for things all the time. You know, we normally go to Florida with these. Sometimes we go to Florida's cousin, the state of Alabama, also a second cousin, the state of Arkansas, or we kind of branch out a little bit. We've been to Maine. We've been to Pennsylvania. We went across the pond to London. We've been to California even. Today, we go to Guthrie, Oklahoma. Guthrie, Oklahoma. And this was a traffic stop that happened back on June 26th. To give you a frame of reference, Guthrie, Oklahoma is just north, about a half an hour north of Oklahoma City. And Sergeant Anthony Gibbs, interviewed by Oklahoma City TV station KFOR, said that they had to stop someone. And the gentleman's name was Stephen Jennings. And he had a lot of things going on. Stephen Jennings had a lot of things going on. Number one, Mr. Jennings. And I'm looking at a picture of him right now, and he looks like a really, really different guy. He was the problem right off the bat, and the police don't like this, generally speaking. He was driving a stolen vehicle. That is never a good thing. Okay, so that's number one. Okay, number two, they went up and they introduced themselves to Mr. Stephen Jennings, and they asked for his license and registration card and so on. Of course, he doesn't have, you know, some of the proper identification. He does have a license on him, though, and the license is suspended. So now, stay with me if you're scoring at home. The good folks in the Logan County Sheriff's Office that have stopped Mr. Jennings, we have learned that he's in a stolen car and he has a suspended license. Then they felt like they needed to search the car, because that's what, if you're police and you see a stolen car and a suspended license, probably a good idea to go through the car and see if there's anything in there that really shouldn't be there. Well, they did find a couple of things, and I'll just give this to you slowly. As I said, you can mark these down on the CGP scorecard. They found an open bottle of Kentucky Deluxe Whiskey, or as they probably say in Kentucky, Kentucky Deluxe Whiskey. It was an open bottle, and whenever I hear that it's an open bottle, I know what it means. Obviously, it's the seal's been cracked and it's open, but I always have this vision that the open bottle of Kentucky Deluxe Whiskey in Mr. Jennings' stolen car is actually just sitting there. It's open. He's got a little spot for it to be open so that he can just take a drink without having to take the top off. So they found an open bottle of Kentucky Deluxe Whiskey during this traffic stop. And then they found a rattlesnake in the car. They found a rattlesnake in the car. I don't know about you, but I know that when I'm driving, I don't like having a fly or a bee or something in the car. The rattlesnake, was it a pet? Was it a rattlesnake? Doesn't just sneak into the car. Seems like Stephen Jennings probably brought the rattlesnake into the car with him. Maybe as a friend, maybe as a traveling partner. I don't know. Maybe taking a road trip together. Very well could be. So you've got the whiskey, you've got the rattlesnake, you have the suspended car, suspended license, you have the stolen car, you have all this going on. You would think that that would be enough, would you not? Of course. Well, he had one other little goodie in there. This was a canister of radioactive powdered uranium. Russ, you ever bought a canister of that? You ever bought a canister? Yeah, I haven't either. A canister of... Where do you get that? Where do you buy a canister of radioactive powdered uranium? What's the most dangerous thing that this gentleman had in his car? The open bottle of Kentucky Deluxe Whiskey, the rattlesnake, or the canister of radioactive powdered uranium? Is there some sort of combo drink that he's about to make for this? Needless to say, Mr. Jennings, this was not a good day for him. He was charged with possession of a stolen vehicle, transporting an open container of liquor, driving with a suspended license. I should mention, I'll just add this little piece in, they also found a gun in the console. The gun was in the console. By the way, you should know also the rattlesnake was, it wasn't just rolling around the car. It was in a terrarium. I mean, so that we should mention that. We should mention it was in a terrarium. But they don't list the charge. He's jailed in Logan County right now. But they don't mention the charge for the powdered uranium. Do you think that the police, say in Fresno, do you think there's something on the books for somebody that they stop on, say, 41 somewhere, driving with a canister of radioactive powdered uranium?
Yeah, we got Buick, 1979 Buick. It's a canister of radioactive powdered uranium. What do we write them up on this?
What do you do with that? I mean, what do you do with that? Where do you buy it? Where do you get it? I wonder if Coach Q knows. He probably doesn't know. Coach Q is up next. This is the CGP.
He was an intense, focused, physical ball player who played every minute of every game by one rule. I'm gonna jump in your chest to wrinkle your vest.
Oh!
Here's Coach Q.
Well, you know, it's always interesting when you are getting ready. It's sometimes things are just handed to you. And here we are getting ready in a couple of minutes or thereabouts to bring on Coach Q, and we're looking forward to him joining us and looking at the, you know, we're always watching the AP Wire and seeing what's going on in Twitter and so on. And then we see breaking news come through. And the breaking news on the ESPN alert says the following, and that is, I'm just going to read it straight to you. Thunder agreed to trade Russell Westbrook to the Rockets for Chris Paul and future draft picks. Holy cow. That is where we're going to start with our good friend, Coach Q. Coach, how are you today?
Well, I'm doing well, CG. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Thank you very much. I had a day off yesterday. Felt rejuvenated, recharged, even if it was a long but fun day. You just heard the breaking news. We heard a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, but we heard several different teams that were possible destinations for Russell Westbrook. We heard Miami. I thought that was going to be a very unique challenge for that team to coexist with a couple of personalities that don't always get along with everybody for one reason or another, Russell Westbrook and Jimmy Butler. We heard possibly Detroit. That seemed like a pretty interesting move with him and Blake Griffin. Coach, I don't know about you. I did not see this one coming.
Well, nobody saw it yesterday. I talked to a ton of NBA people. It was not being discussed. They thought things were going to die down, and this has obviously been something that's been under wraps. And you know, Houston decided to make a move, and OKC knows they're in the rebuild process. So, this is crazy. It's going to be interesting to see what I hear in about an hour or so when I talk to some more people about how this came about. You know, Chris Paul, who has been awesome, but has hit that point where he's injury prone and he's got a bad contract. I mean, Russ Westbrook, can he go to Houston and take them to the promised land and win it all? Because, you know, what does this do? This changes the balance of power. The West is going to be something else.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Ironic that the baseball game that's on TV right now is Houston and Texas. Let's just start with, before we get to the Chris Paul part of this, let's start with the Russell Westbrook start of this. You have him and Harden playing together. They've played before, have they not? I mean, they were together before. So they certainly know each other. They respect each other. Harden's game has evolved to the point where he, whether it's by design, I think it's a little bit part design, and also part James Harden, that he views himself as, you know, this team will sink or swim based upon me. And if I have to get 50 or if I have to get 60, that's the way it's going to be. Russell Westbrook has generally, at least this past year or two, viewed himself as options 1 through 3 and sometimes 1 through 4 in the half-court set. They both are fantastic at creating their own shot. They have a different style of doing it. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm not a fan of Russell Westbrook in terms of the way I see him off the court, and I only know him from what I see and what I hear. I am a big fan of his on the court. I love the way he plays the game. I love the way he is just ferocious. And Harden is ferocious in a different way. How do you see these two coexisting next year, Coach?
I don't know. You know, Russell's going to take the ball and fly. And James likes to take the ball and massage it. You know, if they can find a way to have that 1-2 punch again where Russ can get his assist and then, you know, open up stuff. I mean, they need somebody to go down the lane. What did Houston refuse to do last year? Go down the lane a lot. You know, I think when Harden massages the ball, it's stagnant and guys don't want to play like that. Russ will be able to push the pace off of misses. And I wonder how Harden's going to feel if he's not getting enough shots, because he likes the way he scores is to slow it up. And there's nothing about Russ that's slow. So, and can D'Antoni manage these really dynamic personalities? And that's going to be a big, big thing for Houston, because if they can manage that, you know, it puts them in a position to be world champions. Certainly, you know, they definitely could compete with the Clippers, and I don't know how good the Lakers are going to be or the Warriors, but they're in the conversation for being world champs. That's for sure.
It's really interesting. There was a time in the NBA, and it almost seems a distant memory now, and it wasn't recent. I mean, we're talking about the 80s and the 90s, but the power in the NBA, and there's a lot of younger listeners and younger fans that really just don't remember this because they were too young. The power in the NBA was all in the Eastern Conference. It was the East, and basically it was who's going to get served up for the Bulls in the 90s. And then you had Houston. You know, you had Houston with a couple of good years in there. But in the 80s, you know, you had, of course, the dominant Celtics teams. You had a couple of great Sixers teams, one that won. You had, of course, the Magic Lakers teams. But you never had a Western Conference that was just dominant in terms of the amount of talent that has switched over there. But, Coach, this is going to be a circus, and I mean that in the best possible way, of just every night, every team out there is going to be able to beat each other, just about every team, in terms of the top eight or nine.
Well, yeah, I mean, the West is got talented teams, and I think in the 80s, you talk to Jabbar, Magic, or Keith Wilkes, or Jamal Wilkes, rather, and Worthy, they'll tell you how good those Denver teams were, and Portland had some teams at times, and certainly Seattle and Utah was tough with the Malone and Stockton. And then, of course, you look at how great the Lakers were. They just kind of went through those teams and was there and were able to win five championships in that span. And I don't think this will be what we don't have is we don't have the dominant team that will be there, because I think the Warriors are going to be down for sure. But the Warriors have been that dominant team, and I wonder what will happen. Who can put a team together? Because they have talent in all these situations, but who's going to be the best team? And that's going to be the biggest challenge every night when we watch the NBA coming this fall. Is how good can the Clippers put it together? And then can the Rockets put it together? What the Lakers going to do? And there's no clear cut, but there's like clear cut talent difference between the East and the West. We just don't know how good these teams are because we haven't seen them. I was talking to former Fresno State assistant coach John Welch last night, who's with the LA Clippers now. And he said, you know, we got, you know, Leonard, and we got Paul, but I'm still like a fan. I haven't been in the gym with them yet. I don't know if it's really real yet, and I need to find out, you know, how do we coach these guys? And I think every staff is feeling like that's got this increase of talent on the West side. So once we see how these teams get put together, how well they work together, D'Antoni certainly has an advantage because when he had Steve Nash, he ran it fast. And if he can get Harden to buy into that, they may be just so explosive they may outgun everyone. But we don't know yet. We just don't know.
Talking with Coach Q, a couple more things, certainly. Well, quite a few more things. I said I had a chance to talk with, or Julia Lopez invited me on to Bulldog Insider last week, and I the first block that we did was on Paul George, and it was on that whole situation happening. And we'll get to that in just a second in terms of that combo platter. But one aspect of that I want to ask you about. And I said to her, I'm not equating Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in terms of the kind of effect that they had on the NBA together and obviously the six titles. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are not going to win six titles together. They may win one or even two or maybe none. But I do think, and I'm curious what you think about this, I do think when you talk about players at the level of talent that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard have, we talk about them in terms of offense, but they may be the best 1-2 defensive punch in terms of those kinds of marquee names that we've seen on one team since Michael and Scottie.
Well, and that's what John Welch was talking about yesterday with the Clippers. And, you know, here in Vegas, the buzz is, yeah, you know, LeBron, they got talent in L.A., we know Houston's going to have talent now, But the only team that has two-way talent, the guys who can defend, are the Clippers. And that's going to be the difference maker. That's why I think they will probably be the favorites to be the world champions, is because they can stop you on the other end. Their offense doesn't have to be there. They will defend you. And that's the, you know, it's the name of the game. Guys shut you down. And I think the whole league is worried about that. And they're trying to figure out how to position themselves to get past that. But these guys will go at you. They will defend you. And they can score on you. So if their shots are off, they're going to play hard defensively. And that's hard to get at the NBA level, because a lot of NBA players don't want to put that type of energy on both sides of the floor. They'll play the offensive side, but they won't necessarily – they'll rest on defense. And that's the unique thing about Paul George and Leonard, is that those guys will put that effort in on you and will really, really go after you. And that's what puts them in a unique spot. And I think the Clippers are feeling good about it. They'll feel a lot of pressure. They have an owner that wants to win. He's put the money up for it. But there's pressure there as well. And how do you figure out Leonard's personality? That's going to be a challenge, because he's probably not going to be looking for a relationship. He's going to be looking for, do you know what you're doing? And that's what got him to San Diego, is our coach, Justin Huston, knew what he was doing, and he trusted that, but he's not a relationship type of guy. So there's a lot of hot smoke, self-promoting, you know, I know more than this guy type of stuff in the NBA college level. And you got to be the kind of coach that realize if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to lose. And if you're doing all this fluff talk, it's not going to get done. He wants to get coached. He wants to get his job done. Leave him alone. He's not looking for a relationship off the court. He's looking for you to know what you're doing on the court, and that's it. And you got to have guys around him. You can't have those phony, fake people around him, or you'll lose him. And I think the Clippers are going in with that type of attitude.
Talking with Coach Q, as we always do every Thursday. Missed him last week, obviously. Do you think the term super team is thrown around a little bit too much? Because I'm one who does think that it's thrown around too much. I mean, we're at the point now where what do we call a super team? Is it if there's two stars, if there's three stars, if there's four marquee names? I mean, I just think the name and the entire genre of super team, when you look at the amount of stars on one team, no matter how they get there, this isn't anything new, Coach.
Well, the Warriors were a super team. You got to give them credit. The Lakers had super. The Bulls were. Celtics had super teams. They're just teams that are just so much better that you really can't emulate, duplicate how they play. And I just think we just watched that with the Warriors, because they really, you know, there are a lot of teams making a mistake trying to play like them, but you can't play like them because you just don't have the talent. But when they start talking about, oh, the Lakers are going to have a super team if this happens, that happens, you got to prove that you can win. I wasn't for sure the Warriors had a super team when they got Durant. But when they won it and then they kept, you know, going, oh, yeah, they're something special. So you got to get there. You got to win it. You got to show that you can get it done.
Is it a bad thing, though? Is it a bad thing?
No, I think people enjoy watching to see if you can – if you can win it all. And then what was more enjoyable for the world than to watch Toronto, you know, if you're not a Warriors fan, watch Toronto come in and essentially beat this team that has been so dominant. Someone figures out how to do it. Someone figures out how to beat that person that no one's ever seen get beat before, really. And, man, they come in and do that. That's what makes it exciting as a fan. You know, I think people do throw around super team way too much. But I just think we just finished watching a super team lose the world championship to a team, to a very good team, a great team. Unfortunately, we won't see them repeated.
I saw you slip in that a little bit earlier that you're in Las Vegas. You know, I was on in Las Vegas today, Coach.
Really? I didn't mean to slip it in. I just was just just here watching this stuff here unfold, but. How'd they treat you on the air?
Oh, great. I was on with you know, VSIN or however they call themselves, Vegas Stats and Information, talking Fresno. Fresno State and Mountain West football. They're great. They're great guys there. They took good care of me. We talked for about 20 minutes. Are you checking out some NBA Summer League?
That's why I'm here. I've got some coaches that are clients, and I work with them and talk with them. And so, you know, so I'm just here watching. And, of course, also we have, you know, Deshaun Taylor's playing for the Sixers.
Right.
And then Wyoming star Justin James is at the Kings. I'm going to go watch him. And I saw Cody Martin and Jalen play yesterday with the Hornets. So it was really interesting to watch our Mountain West players play against some of these other guys. And, you know, we had some real nice talent in the Mountain West last year. And it's good to see some of these players doing well. Some of them aren't, Deshaun didn't get the type of playing time he wanted to. But, you know, it's all there. And Jordan Caroline, I saw him play with the Lakers last night. They got thrashed by the Knicks. But it's good to see some of the guys in our conference there.
We're talking with Coach Q. One more thing is next. And as long as we now know that he is out in Vegas checking out the NBA Summer League, I do have a couple of questions about some of the gentlemen that he just mentioned and the Mountain West coming up this fall. It's a little bit earlier because we get to football before we get to basketball. But Coach is there. He's here. We'll talk about it. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
One more thing today for you. Close out your Thursday. We'll be with you tomorrow morning at about 13 hours, 7 to 9 a.m. Solid program coming up for you. Talking with our good friend Coach Q. Coach, you mentioned, I'm going to call an audible here, because once you mentioned Deshaun Taylor and Cody Martin, Jordan Caroline, and some of these other guys who we've watched for some time here in the Mountain West, now watching them at the next level, I want to get your thoughts on it. I think one of the things that's always an eye-opener for me is when you see guys, a lot of people around the country who are watching these games, and certainly people going to Thomas and Mack Center are seeing, not so much people there because they know these guys, but people are watching on TV, they don't necessarily know Taylor and Cody Martin and Jordan Caroline, and I hope that they get the opportunity to show the nation and these teams what we've seen, is that, you know, these guys, you don't have to go to Kentucky and Duke and Kansas and be a player.
No, and, you know, I call teams about certain guys in the Mountain West that I thought could play at the next level, and I was happy to see two players get drafted in the second round for sure, and you know, Martin and James are both very good players, and they got picked up, and you know, they're better than – we have players in our comp in the Mountain West that are just better than some of these other big-time conferences, and it's always good when I see these guys do well out here. It bids well for the conference. And this NBA coach came up to me yesterday and said, look, the Mountain West has the two best players in the world with Paul and Kawhi, even though the Fresno State went in the Mountain West with George was there, but you know what I'm saying. The mm-hmm. two talk of the world is Paul and Leonard. So, hey – what can you do?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. You know, one of the things that I talked about with the guys in Las Vegas today is we're talking about how the Mountain West is really going to come down to four teams. It's going to come down to Boise State and Utah State in the Mountain Division and San Diego State, Fresno State in the West. There's a couple of dark horses out there. Hawaii is one of them, and Air Force is another. But it's really going to come down to those four teams. And for Fresno State, it's going to come down to two games more than any other. Utah State here at Bulldog Stadium, San Diego State down in beautiful San Diego. In basketball this year, you look at Justin Hudson, you see Kawhi Leonard, and I'm seeing in different articles around the country, every now and then I'll see Justin Hudson's name mentioned. Well, the current coach at Fresno State helped recruit and so on and so forth, Kawhi Leonard. Do you think there's any chance at all of dot connecting that this will be a little kick of juice, so to speak, for Justin Hudson and Fresno State simply because of all the Kawhi talk and what's happened?
Yeah, it certainly has. In the basketball world, you know, people know it, and that's who the people you need to have know is those young coaches that have players that can go to a big school and want to play somewhere, and they know, hey, Paul George is you know, he went to Fresno State. Oh, wow. Kawhi Leonard, his coach was from San Diego State that brought him. He's at Fresno State. So it's definitely going to have a big kick, and the Clippers are going to do well, and there's going to be a lot of pub because the L.A. market is the number two in the country, as you know. It may be a big-time recruiting tool for every sport there if those guys do well. It just helps everyone from the football program to the track program to the tennis. It's going to help you because name recognition is going to come through this with those guys being at the Clippers.
Folks, he is Coach Q. He joins us every Thursday at 5:35, unless we have something like, I don't know, July 4th, or you know, he's off to Vegas, or you never really know where Coach Q is. He's usually in the Bay Area. He's doing something important, and we always appreciate him taking some time to join us. And Coach, you know, I got a new grill recently, and I'm just telling you right now, I'm cooking up some tri-tip, and the next time I do it, the call's coming your way.
I'm going to answer it too, brother.
I can't wait. You be safe out there. Good times, and we'll talk next week, my friend.
Sounds great, CG. Take care.
All right, there you go. There's the big man himself, Coach Q. We thank him for joining us, as we do Mike Oz from Yahoo Sports, Marty Lenz from KOA News Radio in Denver, my man Russ doing his usual great job, and to all of you. And to people listening down in Los Angeles, like our man Jonathan. We appreciate that as well, listening on 940ESPNFresno.com. Folks, we will see you in 13 hours, the morning wake-up call. Until then, you're on your own.